This looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Good win for the Red Sox again yesterday, and my intention today was to ask you a big-picture question with the ball club. Okay, my intention was to do that. But we do have a little bit of breaking news as it pertains to the Red Sox, and it does not affect the Major League team in the short term. Okay, in the short term, it's nobody on the Major League roster. But just a short time ago, it was announced by Major League Baseball that Michael Chavis, the top-rated prospect, or one of the top-rated prospects in the Red Sox system, depending on which service you want to use as an evaluator for these players in the Red Sox system, has been suspended for 80 games for violating baseball's substance abuse policy, the performance-enhancing drug policy. Michael Chavis suspended for 80 games by Major League Baseball. Billy Lanny's in for Jimmy Stewart today as our producer, 617-779-0985. Billy, you can open up the phones, pal. Let's open up right away. Jim Murray's alongside, as always. And let me just tell you up front on Michael Chavis. Some of you may know who he is. The hardcores probably do. The average fan may not. Chavis is a former first-round draft pick whose career was largely a bust until last season. That alone should have prompted some red flags. Okay, and Murray, for all I remember, if I never said this on the air, I guarantee you I said it off. Like, what is going on with this kid? When you really look at it. So let me just give you the quick rundown on Michael Chavis. So again, first round draft pick, the first 3 years in the minor leagues, 2014, 15, and 16, Chavis's OPSs were in order 772, 682, 684. So the last 2 years had an OPS of 682 and 684. And combined in 3 years in the minor leagues, he hit 25 home runs. Chavis, through 2016, through 3 years in the minors, was a gargantuan, colossal bust. Huge. Huge. And then last year, he had an OPS of 910 with 31 home runs. The OPS went up almost 25 points. And he hit more home runs last season than he hit in his first three combined. At tougher competition, if that makes any sense. So, again, if I didn't say this on the air, what did you think was going on with that kid? And he's released a statement, which honestly was just handed to me now by Billy Lanny. I have not read it yet. Murray, have you read it?
It's a lot of wah. It starts, I've been searching for an answer as to how a prohibited substance I've never heard of, DHMCT, was detected in my urine during the off season. It's a question that unfortunately has not been answered, and I've run out of time for now to find an answer. Hopeless as this is for me, I'm faced with the reality that maybe I'll never know. The only thing I do know is that I would never, ever, and have never purposely taken any prohibited substance in my entire life, and then blah, blah, blah.
Okay, stop there. Yeah. Stop there. I mean, again, if you were to just look at the numbers. Forget pictures of the guy and everything. Look at the number. Look at where he was drafted. Look how he performed the first 3 years. Look at year four. How do you explain that? And the reason I'm telling you this as a Red Sox fan, and this was a long way to get there, but here's the real point. This team has deficiencies. They're not perfect. They have holes, as we have seen in the first week of the season. They definitely need someone to pitch the eighth inning for them, and Michael Chavis may have been your most tradable commodity. When you really weigh it out, your two best prospects in the system are Chavis, I'll tell you what, two of three. Chavis, Jay Groom, and Sam Travis at first base. And Chavis, in particular, plays third base, which currently belongs to who on the Red Sox roster, Murray? Who plays third, Billy?
Rafael Devers.
There you go, Devers. This kid's not bumping Rafael Devers out of there. Now, the Red Sox may need a first baseman, but you got Travis there for the longer term if you want to go that route. And Travis had a good spring. So, the bottom line, Chavis was a candidate to be dealt. He was a trade chip.
Well, Dave Dombrowski was busy hanging out having coffee with Tony La Russa. So.
And so let me tell you now that you don't have that trade chip anymore. Who in their right mind is going to give you anything for Michael Chavis now?
Well, the kid is with no doubt tarnished. And he, you know, to his credit, is one of the things he does touch on in this whole very long-winded little press release he put out.
So the Red Sox also have issued a statement that was very brief that basically said, Chavis tested positive. We're going to work with him in MLB. You know, we're going to get him into a program or something of the like. And Murray, if you can find that statement, that would be great. But the Red Sox made no excuses. It was a very short statement, two sentences. So if you want to talk about the prospects of repairing that bullpen, we could certainly do that because you just lost a big bargaining chip in Michael Chavis. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. Here is the bigger picture question. And Dan Shaughnessy touched on this to a degree in the Boston Globe today. But to me, this really speaks to something even beyond just what Shaughnessy's opinions of the Red Sox are here in the early part of the season. The headline on Dan Shaughnessy's column in the Globe today, plenty to like about these Red Sox. Plenty to like about these Red Sox. The season is now a week old. The Red Sox are 6-1, and in their home opener yesterday at Fenway Park, I told you this last night. They showed you something yesterday. They showed you some spirit, some fight, and they showed you something that could make you believe that this team this year is worth investing in. So now here's my question. A lot has been said about the Red Sox and about baseball in general in the last year, especially concerning this team in particular. And so here we are now, a week into the season, and David Price has pitched exceptionally well. Hanley Ramirez is off to a great start. Xander Bogaerts came out of the gate like gangbusters. They are 6-1 with a new manager, and if nothing else, they seem more likable than they were a year ago. So my question to you as a Red Sox fan is, do you now believe in them? Have they done enough here in the early part of the season to say, for you to say, you know what? I'm going to start digging in. This team actually looks like they got something. There's something there. I don't know what it is yet, but there's something there. And I don't mean to tell you that they're necessarily the best team in baseball or that they are without flaws. Because if you've watched them play here in the early part of the year, you know that they have flaws. They have not hit the ball like they should be hitting it yet. With or without J.D. Martinez, they have not lived up to offensive expectation yet. In fact, they're not even close. On the bases, they've been a disaster. The Red Sox on the bases have been a freaking disaster. Really. The bullpen feels like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic at the moment. Because in that eighth inning, tell me how many guys that Alex Cora can try before he figures out who can actually do the job. Go right down the list. Joe Kelly blew it on opening day. Carson Smith blew it yesterday. Matt Barnes blew the game in, or tried to blow the game in Miami the other night. Bobby Pointer's a kid who I don't think you want to entrust with the eighth inning just yet. They're going to have to go get someone, unless Tyler Thornburg comes out of spring training completely healthy and just regains the form he had in his final year with Milwaukee. Even then, do we know that Thornburg can do the job? Because I don't know if he can. So when you weigh all that out, lots of holes. That said, the starting pitching thus far has been exceptional, and do you know that the Red Sox have not committed an error yet? No errors. For a team that had all kinds of questions defensively in the infield, no errors. Now, look, I think that's a little deceiving because there were a couple of plays in the last week that I watched Eduardo Nunez not make up the middle that weren't necessarily errors, but they were plays that should be made. Even so, if you make the plays you should make, win the games you should win, in Major League Baseball, that can be 90% of the battle.
Yeah, Nunez missed out on a double play yesterday. And so my answer real quick, Maz, is no, I'm not. You know, it's based on the competition thus far. It's been the Marlins and the Rays. Let's see what it looks like after you get the Yankees and the Angels here in the next couple of weeks. I'm with you. The starting pitching has been phenomenal. But the bullpen outside of Craig Kimbrell is one big question mark. Some guys like Hanley Ramirez and Xander Bogaerts have been excellent, but it's just too early. So, no, I'm a hard no.
So, look, I'm not making any long-term judgments on it yet, Murray. I'll tell you that up front. I'm not making any long-term judgments. But yesterday, the way that game went yesterday, started to change my opinion a little bit. Okay, now again, I told you, I asked you the question yesterday of what do you put more emphasis on? The breakdown in the eighth inning? And by you, I mean you as a Red Sox fan. What do you put more emphasis on? The breakdown in the eighth inning or the comeback in the ninth? And believe it or not, for a day, if only for a day, this early in the year, with a new manager and a new outlook on some of these guys, and I'm talking about Price, I'm talking about Hanley, I'm talking about Bogarts, I think there was reason to look at them and go, huh, what do you know? Good win. I mean, you don't get many like that during the course of the year where you're trailing into the ninth and you come back and win. Last year, the Red Sox won 93 games. That happened just 5 times. Yesterday, in the home opener, it happened for the first time in 20 years. The Red Sox hadn't come back in the ninth inning of a home opener since 1998. And that day, Mo Vaughn hit one into the right field corner, I remember vividly, against the Seattle Mariners. That year was the first year of Pedro Martinez in Boston, and the Red Sox went to the playoffs. And in fact, it really was the beginning of sort of a new era in Red Sox history with Pedro. They made the playoffs again in 99. They won 90-plus games in 2002, and then you all know what happened in 03 and 04 after the ownership change. So again, I ask you, have you seen enough in the first week to at least give you pause and say, maybe they are different? Because on paper and between the lines in terms of the X's and O's and the batting average and the lineup and the bullpen and the base running, they look a lot like 2016. But is the vibe different? And do you like them better? Because to me, I started to like that team a little bit yesterday. I know that's a rarity. I don't often admit I like anything. But yesterday, I started to like that team a little bit. We'll examine the Chavis ramifications and take a deep look at these Red Sox here over the course of the next hour, or up until 7 o'clock. I was going to say over the course of the next hour. I will take your calls, too, when we come back.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
To go out there and get 21 outs and give up no runs, you know, I didn't want to tip my cap because that would kind of take myself out of the game, I feel like. So I didn't know if I was going to go back out for the eighth, but if I'd have been sure of it, I definitely would have tipped my cap. But I didn't want to kind of show Alex that I thought I was going to be done.
It's David Price explaining why he didn't tip his cap when he came out of the game yesterday. And I don't know if I believe him. I don't. He might have just been, you know, he's feeling good about himself and maybe he's just covering his tracks because deep down he's still hurt by the whole Boston experience. So it sounded believable. Maybe it is true. I'm just telling you, I'm uncertain about it. I still have my doubts about whether Price really wants to be here.
You should be, considering the history.
But I will say this. It sounds like he's trying. Okay, it sounds like he's trying to put last year behind him and start new. It sounded like it in spring training. It sounded like he was at least willing to accept some culpability and that he showed up this year with at least a partially new outlook. Independent of that, he's pitching his ass off right now. It didn't even occur to me that if you go back into last year, I think he has something like 29 innings without allowing a run now.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
20, I mean, I didn't even think of that. Since that whole Eckersley thing happened, it's like he went off on someone, got it out of his system, and then he was throwing bullets at the end of last year. And now he's not throwing the ball quite as hard, but he is throwing the ball well, and I love the fact that most of his pitches are power pitches. There's not as much finesse in Price, which tells me he's in a good place, and I wonder if Dana Lavangi got through to him there too. Like, quit messing around with the changeup and curveball so much.
I'm taking him at his word with yesterday, though. He was only at, I think, 96 pitches, and, you know.
I think it was 91. Yeah, go ahead.
So, but considering the weather and that he was dealing, like, you know, I think it was well within reason that he was probably going to end up coming back out. But, I don't know, my bigger issue, and I said it earlier on the Felger and Mass show, is that it's just silly that it's one of these yet another unwritten rules in baseball that if you tip your cap as you're walking off the mound, that pretty much indicates you're going to be done. You know, like if you wanted to show the crowd some love because they were, you know, they're all pumped up about your performance, just tip your cap. It doesn't necessarily mean you should be done for the day. Like that to me is just stupid.
Yeah, I can see where it might send Cora a message, though, that Price in his mind had turned it off, right? And then...
Well, just talk. Have better communication.
Well, so that's right. Yeah, so that's right. So that's right. You're right about that, Mark. See, to me, he was coming out of that game, which is why I don't know if I really believe him, and I think he knew he was coming out. Even though he was at 91, seven innings, no other Red Sox pitcher has pitched into the seventh. Price has now done it twice. So I can't imagine that he was walking off the mound saying, well, Cora's going to send me back out for the eighth. Like, to me, instinctively, I looked at it and said, he's not going back out there. That's it. Seven, he's done.
Well, considering how it played out, I wish he had.
And also, given the way spring training went and then preaching, we're going to protect these guys, which, by the way, again, I think Cora's doing the right thing. Given that whole approach, there was no way Cora was going to send him back out for the eighth. So, again, but independent of that, the Price pitched well. His attitude seems better. Hanley's attitude seems good. Bogaerts' attitude seems good. All systems go. They're 6-1, which right now is exactly where they should be. Dan's in Quincy. Dan, what do you got? Danny, there?
I just wanted to talk about David Price and his attitude. Maz, you were just hitting on it. I really think he could be a top three Cy Young pitcher this year based off the comments that he's had in the preseason, based off of how he's performed thus far. Granted, that's against the Tampa lineup. And that goes into my second point. Maz, you had hit on, what do I put more weight into yesterday? The blown save, or I guess not blown save, but blowing the game up in the bullpen or the comeback? We're supposed to beat the Rays. And I don't want to see Carson Smith blow the game in the eighth inning. All year last year we heard, oh, what if we only had Carson Smith? That would solve all of our eighth inning problems. What have you done this year? The guy sucks.
Okay, so Dan, look, the eighth inning's a major problem. In fact, right now I think it's the biggest problem on the team, aside from the lack of offense, but I think they have the talent there that will ultimately seek its level. In the bullpen, I think these guys are what they are. I don't think Carson Smith's all that good. He's okay. In his sixth or seventh inning, he's fine. Same with Barnes, same with Kelly. But none of them can pitch in the eighth. They don't consistently command the ball well enough, any of those three guys, to be able to pitch the eighth inning. You need a guy in the eighth, especially on a team like this and against competition like Houston and the Yankees, who is going to command the ball like a closer. You need that kind of guy, or is as overpowering as a closer, something close to it. They don't have that. They don't. And now maybe Thornburg is it when he comes back, but that thoracic outlet injury syndrome that he had, that a lot of guys take a long time to come back from that, and don't, and a lot of them don't make it back all the way. John's in a car. Go, John.
All right, give me the name of the two prospects that were suspended for PEDs in the system. Again.
Yeah, the guy that Murray and Felger were talking about, Murray, I don't remember who that one was. Chavis is the big one, though. Who's the other one, Murray?
Give me one second.
Caller, go ahead. John, what's your point? Okay, John, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put you on hold, all right, because you're in a bad area, and we'll try to get back to you in a minute. In the interim, let's go to AJ, who's in a car. AJ, what do you got?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to run one name by you in the system right now. I know he's been kind of relatively a bust for most of his career in the minors, but maybe you can kind of try to trick another team into getting value. Or Trey Ball. What's your guys' opinion on him? Because I know in the past couple, like, weeks, months, he's been doing okay. Do you think he could get any kind of value out of him? Or
okay, so look, AJ, I think that a guy like Ball, you have a shot at moving, depending on what type of piece you're looking back for or looking for to come back. Ball was the number 7 pick in the draft. I think he was the first guy taken under Ben Cherington's watch. And as the number 7 pick in the draft in particular, disaster. Now, I haven't looked at his numbers recently, but I know last year wasn't good. There was one brief period of time there where it looked like he was starting to figure it out. But he too, has been a bust. So if you were to look at the top 100 prospects in Major League Baseball, the Red Sox have two. They have two. One is Chavis and one is Jay Groom, the left-handed pitcher that they took. I think it was Dombrowski's first year, and he was taken number 12 overall. Groom slid to them because of character issues. He has not had a great early start to his career either, and he's had some injuries. So the Red Sox, in terms of tradable commodities there in the minors, had precious few and maybe the biggest one to trade. And I say that again because Chavis plays third base. You have a young third baseman. So if you were going to move a decent prospect, Chavis was the guy. Now, I think he has zero value. Let me try John again in his car. John, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. All right, I'll just throw it out quick, and I just wanted to hear you and Murray spitball on it. It's really mostly goofing around, but if this is a problem at the lower level, have you noticed how huge Bogaerts and Benintendi look this year compared to last year? We get some boys juicing. We get juicing boys.
So, John, I'll tell you what. I think Bogaerts has looked leaner the last I don't know about this year. To me, he doesn't look much different this year than he did last year. A couple of years ago, he was too big, and then he thinned out. He wasn't moving well defensively, and I'm going back two or three years now. And then he came into camp the next year, and he was much leaner and felt more agile to me. I like the way Bogaerts looks right now.
He looks like the exact same guy. And to me, the only aesthetic difference with Andrew Benintendi is there's less hair. They don't look like different, you know, bigger physical beasts to me.
Yeah, so Benintendi, a lot was written about him coming in bigger. And he himself said, I think that he came in 15 pounds heavier. I don't like the short hair either, Murray, for what it's worth. But I haven't seen any sort of tangible difference in his game. And unless there's a tangible difference in his game, then I'm not, you know, look, who knows who's doing what? Like, honestly, as long as they don't get popped, who cares?
Right.
At the end of the day, who cares? As long as they don't get popped, I mean, I think we're beyond the idea or the age of thinking that these guys are somehow chaste and pure. They're not. The only reason I care about Chavis getting popped is because they can't trade him. I don't care about what the organization's doing down in the minors or what they're not doing. They can't trade this guy now. They should have moved him during the offseason. What a mistake. But again, you should not be surprised that he got nailed. Look at his minor league numbers. The guy sucked for 3 years. All of a sudden, he has an OPS over 900 and it's 31 homers. Where did that come from? Before we get back to your calls, just a quick reminder. We have a number of sponsors on the Baseball Reporters, and this program is brought to you by Big Y. Just like the Baseball Reporters program, Big Y has all the bases covered to get you game ready this baseball season. Stop in tonight on your way home. Murray's got your headlines, and then we will continue with your phone calls.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now the infield's back for a double play, but the outfield's still shallow. They have to be.
Fly ball right field, and that is going to do it. Onto the warning track, the Red Sox walk it off. Bradley scores, and the Sox win it in 12. Hanley again. Hanley Ramirez running for his life, but he's the star once more.
So I don't know what the overall numbers are, but if there is a guy who has had more impactful hits than Hanley Ramirez this week, I'd like to see him. You talk about a guy who, you know, if you believe in that whole player of the week thing, and there's still, you know, a full weekend to go here. Hanley, he had a two-run homer to blow opening game in Miami on Monday. He then hit the extra base hit in extra innings to win the game on Tuesday. Then they come to the home opener. He has the hit to win the game there in extra innings. So that's three really decisive hits or, you know, decisive blows from Hanley Ramirez just in three games this week, and they've had two off days. I mean, three games in a row. Hanley is becoming a force in that lineup, or has been a force in that lineup here in the early part of the year. The question is whether or not he can sustain it and whether or not he's really engaged for the long term, or whether this is just some sort of temporary thing. Bob is in Dedham on Hanley. Go.
Hey, Tony. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
I just got to vent. If I hear somebody say Hanley is engaged one more time, like, we're supposed to be grateful that this nitwit at $19 million a year has decided to grace us with an effort this year.
22.
I'm going to lose my mind. Tell me it doesn't drive you crazy, please.
So, Bob, look, it's a great point, right? The standards for Hanley are so low in terms of giving you an effort, concentration, and focus that when he does it, you're happy.
Oh my God.
So listen, you know, again, I absolutely. There are no two ways about it. There's a low standard for Hanley when it comes to the level of engagement. Now let me ask you this question. If he is focused, is he a game changer?
Absolutely. I mean, the talent's there. But I want to go back. When they acquired him in 2015, Tony, I read in a Sunday Notes in either the Herald or the Globe, the writer quoted a person from the Los Angeles Dodgers organization. They couldn't say the name. But the quote was, regarding Hanley, it goes, that guy doesn't give an F. That was the quote. And I just look at him, it's the difference between baseball and all the other sports.
Okay,
you know,
so
I mean, we're supposed to be grateful that this guy is giving an effort. It's just so ridiculous.
I know. Listen, it's preposterous. It is. The reality that he is, a child like that is unfortunate. It's their fault. They signed him. They knew what they were getting when they brought him back here. But that said, if Hanley does want to play like he did 2 years ago, he changes the lineup. He changes the lineup. And he would have. I still had confidence in Hanley going into the playoffs last year. I just think he's one of those guys that can hit good pitching. One of the few that they really have. Use yesterday as an example. Okay, watch the at-bat. And Hanley's comment after the game, take an easy swing. I just needed to hit the ball in the air. He understood the situation. He didn't overswing. He didn't overreact. And watch the swing. He saw the pitch, identified it, and he just flicked the bat out there. I mean, it was effortless, and he still hit the warning track. He still hit the warning track and then bounced it into the bullpen. So this guy, when he wants to hit, is highly skilled. Highly skilled and can change the lineup. So all I'm saying is, now look, I've said to you in the early part of this year, three guys who Farrell might have had no ability to connect to whatsoever. Hanley, who, again, very few managers have an ability to connect to. But nonetheless, in the case of Hanley, maybe Alex Cora does. Again, they're both Caribbean guys, and a lot of those island guys down there do have a certain kinship. So maybe connect to him. But Hanley, contract year. Effectively, anyway, if he wants that option picked up or if he wants the option vested. David Price, contract year. Xander Bogaerts, not a contract year, but it is his last arbitration year, which just so happens to be when Jacoby Ellsbury had a breakout year, and he was another Scott Boras client. All you need is that one big breakout year in your final arbitration year or your free agent year, and you will get a big contract. Okay, so maybe Bogaerts is a little more focused, too. Mark in his car has a question for me. What do you got, Mark?
Mass. What I want to know is, why do these guys look like city squirrels on the base pass? What the hell is going on with these clowns?
It's brutal, isn't it?
It's like they're unaware of the situation. Please enlighten me.
Oh, Mark, please. The base running, if it's possible, the base running in 2018 has somehow been worse than it was a year ago. Last year, they ran into 81 outs in 162 games. Even I can do that math. That is one mistake every two games. This year, 7 for 7. If it's possible, they're even running the bases worse.
The kid with the short hair, again, what the hell happened? Was it a Samson situation? He shaved his head and he lost his mind? It's constant with him.
Okay, so Mark, that is a reference? That's a mythological reference that's going to go way beyond our listeners. But nonetheless, Benintendi's brutal. And I'll tell you what, there have been an alarming number of guys on the Red Sox already who on balls in the dirt have tried to advance from first to second and been thrown out. Betts did it early in the year. I think Vasquez did it in a game. And now Benintendi has done it. And you know who I blame for this? The first base coach. Tom Goodwin. Goodwin was a burner during his career, mostly, or at least he started with the Kansas City Royals. I don't remember where he ended up. He moved around a little bit at the end of his career. But they brought Goodwin back to really put an emphasis on the base running. And Carlos Fabelis, the third base coach, aside from getting Brock Holt thrown out at the plate the other day in Tampa, he's another one who ran the bases well with Kansas City. Kansas City had speed teams for years. And I think Goodwin has told these guys, when the ball hits the dirt, go. Go. Which is not a bad practice. A lot of teams subscribe to it, particularly if they don't hit the ball out of the ballpark. The Minnesota Twins used to preach this for years. They were an aggressive base-running team that as soon as the ball hit the dirt, they went. Because the logic is that the catcher's not going to make the play First of all, he's not going to pick it. And even if he does block it, it's probably going to bounce far enough away where he's not going to pick it up and throw you out. So if you're Mookie Betts, who can fly, that one I get. That one I get. But Vasquez, Benintendi, if that ball doesn't get far enough for you to get down there, you don't go. I mean, Benintendi's not that fast. He's an athletic kid, but he's not a burner. Mookie can run. Mike's in the car. Get Mike.
Hey, a couple things. If Benintendi and Bogaerts are on the, I'm okay with that. I think it's good for the game. I think David Price, I think it's a good thing. He's showing a little bit of respect to his manager because I don't think he had any for the guy who was in the dugout there last year, and it, you could hear it in his voice, and I only think that's a positive. And then lastly, Kimbrel, what's the deal with him? If that man implodes, what do we have left here in the bullpen? Are we stuck with Joe Kelly? Kimbrel's the last, kind of our last straw, if you will. And he's a guy who loves to throw ball 8, ball 12, ball 16, and then here we go, strikes out the side. I don't get it.
Okay, so Mike, don't even take me there yet. If Kimbrel starts to go bad like he did 2 years ago, oof, scary. Scary. Now look, overall here in the early part of the year, I think Kimbrel's been pretty good. He's really been pretty good since opening day last year. And let's not forget, he had a very short spring because he was up here the whole time throwing to college kids while he was dealing with some serious issues regarding his infant daughter. Okay, so he had a lot going on. Kimbrel's the least of my concerns right now. I have zero concern about Craig Kimbrel. I'm concerned about getting to him because that eighth inning, sorry. Kelly can't do it. Barnes can't do it. And Carson Smith can't do it. Murray had that stat last night. 10 runs in the eighth inning they've given up this year. 10 runs in the eighth inning. And Cora has tried all of them. See, that's another one where I don't blame Cora for the eighth. Who's he supposed to go to? None of them can do the job. Pointer does not feel like an eighth inning guy to me. 617-779-0985. I want to get back. See, a couple of you still there. We will continue with your phone calls. And I want to get to some of the comments that Michael Chavis made in his statement earlier tonight after we learned that one of the best prospects in the Red Sox system, one of their true tradable commodities as they approach the trading deadline this year, has been suspended for 80 games for violating baseball's substance abuse policy with regard to PEDs. We'll read you some of the comments from Chavis in that statement. You can tell me what you think. We'll do that next.
From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The baseball reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Before I get back to your calls, again, the news of the day regarding the Red Sox. News of the day, team's not playing today. Always it's customary to have an off day after opening day so that people holding tickets can still attend the game in the event of a rainout. That's why you get an odd rainout on a Friday here, or an odd open date for the Red Sox on a Friday. No game today. Nonetheless, there was news. It came late this afternoon or early this evening that Michael Chavis, one of the top prospects in the Red Sox system, probably one of the top two, along with Jay Groom, left-handed pitcher, and those two, Chavis, a third baseman. As a third baseman, probably their most tradable commodity, given that Rafael Devers is 21 years old or whatever he is, playing third base, and he's not going anywhere. So Chavis was a guy they were going to move. Suspended. 80 games for violating baseball substance abuse policy with regards to performance-enhancing drugs. So Chavis wrote, or his agents wrote, released, Chavis released a fairly lengthy statement. I mean, it's, you know, it's a full page, some of which I want to read to you, okay? So, Billy Lanny, you're pro-steroid in baseball, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So, you just tell me whether or not you believe any of the stuff that's in this particular, I'm going to read you some highlights from it. Chavis' statement says, over the past several months, I have been searching for an answer as to how a prohibited substance I have never heard of was detected in my urine during the off season. Do you believe that?
No.
Me neither. What a lie. I mean, you know how you can tell it's a lie? The mere fact that someone issues a statement. Because how do we prove that he didn't know? You can't. You can't prove it. So what do? They all issue a statement. If they really wanted to defend themselves and come off as believable, they'd hold a press conference. They'd stand out there and show you that they're telling the truth. But you know what they do? They don't want the questions. Because then they don't have answers because they know they broke the rules. Okay? So then Chavis goes on. Equally frustrating is that everything I've accomplished in professional baseball will now be questioned, even though I have never had a positive result over countless urine and blood tests before this offseason, including several tests during the past season. So to that I say, correct. Yes, everything you've done will be called into question. And note how he mentions including several tests last season, as if to say, no, my performance last year was legit. My OPS of 910, even though my minor league career up until that point sucked, my 910 OPS was legit. And even though I hit 25 home runs in 3 years, my first 3 years in the minor leagues, my 31 home runs last year, along with the 910 OPS, that was legit. How could you possibly believe that? So look, he's not the only guy to use. Of course, a lot of them use, but he got caught. And now the real damage for the Red Sox is that they can't trade his ass and get pitching help in the bullpen when they need it, or at least not as much as they could have. To me, the real loser in this is the Red Sox. It's not Chavis, because this kid is never going to play here anyway. It's not even you as a fan. I mean, his career will be called into question, but you know what? He was going to end up somewhere else anyway. And I don't know, he probably wasn't going to make it. I don't know how much you get as a signing bonus, but he was a first-round pick. And then he goes on to say, I cannot sufficiently verbalize how this entire situation has left me with feelings ranging from anger, fear, frustration, sadness, confusion, and complete despair. And I would say, how do you think Dave Dombrowski feels right now, given that he probably could have and should have traded you over the winter? The Red Sox might have been able to get something for this guy over the winter. In fact, they would have been able to get something for this guy over the winter. Now he's popped for 80 games, and his trade value, at least if I'm another team, zippo. Zip. Who's going to trade for this guy now? By contrast. So again, Chavis gives you a statement of four long paragraphs that take up really a full page. He signs it, rather, Michael Chavis, Boston Red Sox, with a couple of Bible chapters and verses under his name. James 1, verses 2 and 3, and James 1, verse 12, that talk about being able to withstand adversity. Okay, that's the statement he released. The Red Sox statement, two sentences. The Boston Red Sox fully support Major League Baseball and the minor league drug prevention and treatment program, period. No mention of Chavis. They fully support the program. Sentence two. While we are disappointed by the news of the violation, we will look to provide the appropriate support to Michael. I take it back. It's three sentences. The last two are so short they look like one. Going forward, the club will not comment further on the matter. So again, the only sentence of this three-sentence, three-line statement in which the Red Sox talk about Chavis, while we are disappointed by the news of this violation, we will look to provide the appropriate support to Michael. Nothing about they were surprised, nothing about unexpected, you know, we overlooked his program. You never know what your players are putting in their system. My guess is the Red Sox knew this kid was up to something. And when I say up to something, based on the results. Really. I mean, how could you possibly be surprised by this when you look at Chavis's history in the minor leagues? One last quick thing. Chavis did not play in a minor league game this spring. The Red Sox said he had an oblique strain. My guess, because Chavis said so in the statement, is that he failed the test during the offseason. The Red Sox knew in spring training that he was going to be popped at the start of the year. They knew. And so they didn't play him in any of the games, and they buried him somewhere and kept him away from the media, which is smart. Smart thing to do, but that's the reality of what is likely to have happened with Michael Chavis. Celtics Bulls coming up next after Celtics pregame. Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell, Everybody have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday.